Good evening and welcome to Monsters Among Us. I am your guide, Derek Hayes. Now, per usual, it's an absolute pleasure to have you back with us this evening. This chilly evening. You see, last week's storm brought with it some frigid temperatures. Well, frigid for Southern California at least. But don't let the temperature outside fool you. Things are red hot here in the studio. And I have one hell of a program lined up for you this evening. Stories ranging from naked and violent ghosts, to witches, werewolves, and even a visit from the FBI. But first, to kick us off this evening, we venture to the state of Illinois, where Andy is waiting with his entry.
Hey Derek, my name is Andy. I'm from West Central Illinois. So living with my in-laws, I had just accepted a new job and couldn't afford a place for me and my fiance quite yet. Get stressful at home, dude was about 12 years old living with us. We just like to get out of the house every now and then, just clear our minds, listen to music, smoke a cigarette or whatever. It's a very rural area, so it's easy to just drive around back roads. There's a lot of tree tunnels and deer around. A lot of deer, can't stress that enough. We always have to watch out for them. So it's just a fun little distraction, honestly. Anywho, it's around night, I'd say between 9 or 10 p.m. It's a weekend night, I want to say. The kid was being pretty loud, so we just wanted to get out, drive around for a little bit. Nothing unusual. It's along this cruise route we've done hundreds of times. When out of nowhere, along our right, we notice a bright fireball-like object appear about a couple hundred feet in the sky, I'd wager, maybe 50 to 100 feet out to our right, and then, you know, somewhere between 100 and 200 feet in the sky. And this thing just plummets for about a second before it looks like it fizzles out, well before it would hit the ground. There was no sound. We couldn't see anything in the sky. There was nothing around. You know, we didn't think it was a firework because of the no sound or anything. And we were just joking, aliens, haha, whatever, you know. Anywho, we just continue our route and we head home. Next morning, we're thinking, well, what was that? We were curious all night, actually. So we go out along that route. And this was above a cornfield that had been harvested a couple days prior. And we had noticed nothing unusual in that field the night prior, besides the fireball, of course. But now there's what appears to be a cattle body, and it's been picked clean. There's a couple buzzards around, there's a few other animals, some raccoons, other things, and it's about the spot where we would estimate that fireball to have been over. You know, I don't know if that was something just dumping off a cattle body or what, but it was pretty spooky. I don't know, we saw it just driving along in our car. Thought it might fit along with this episode. Thank you for listening, Derek. Keep it spooky.
Thank you, Andy. You know, based on his description, it almost sounds like your stereotypical meteor. A small chunk of rock hurled from space, only to land in a fiery crash as it burns through our atmosphere and plummets to the Earth. Is it possible that, if it was indeed a meteor, that it maybe hit the cow that Andy later saw, deceased in the cornfield? Now look, it sounds far-fetched, but believe it or not, it's happened before. In 1972, in Trujillo, Venezuela, A meteor struck and killed a cow belonging to a local physician. The story goes that the roughly 110-pound rock split the animal directly in two, instantly. Now that is one unlucky cow. But believe it or not, it's also happened to a fellow human being as well. On November 30th, 1954, a 9-pound meteorite tore through the roof of Ann Hodges' home in Sylacauga, Alabama, bouncing off her leg as she rested in bed. Now, unlike the cow in Venezuela, Hodges survived her brush with extraterrestrial death. But she was left with a nasty bruise as proof of the one-in-a-billion occurrence. And before you go getting all comfortable, saying things like 1954 and 1972 were such a long time ago, that kind of thing simply doesn't happen anymore. Or surely, that sort of thing wouldn't happen to me. Well, allow me to introduce you to Ruth Hamilton from British Columbia.
On the night of October 4th, Ruth Hamilton had been asleep for hours when she awoke to the sound of her dog barking.
Ready?
Then, moments later, this came hurtling into her bedroom.
It sounded like an explosion happening. Jumped out of bed, ran over and turned on the light and saw a hole in my roof.
The 66-year-old immediately called 911. It was only then she discovered what had happened.
Flipped back the top pillow, and there was the rock.
A gray charcoal chunk of rock the size of a softball came tearing through Hamilton's roof, landing in between her pillows just centimeters from where her head had been only seconds earlier.
Just thinking of that just makes my heart race. It went through tin, asphalt shingles, plywood, and then the drywall.
While Hamilton was shaken up, she wasn't hurt. And now she has a story to tell that's truly out of this world.
And yet, still a few of you out there still murmuring, "But Derek, that was well over a year ago. No way it would happen again." Well, naysayer, this occurrence happened less than 2 weeks ago, an hour or so north of Sacramento, California.
Heard a big bang. I started to smell smoke, and I went onto my porch, and it was completely engulfed in flames.
It appears this bright ball of light, which lit up the dark Northern California sky around 7:30, landed in the middle of nowhere.
What do you think hit your house?
They said it was a meteor. I've always watched meteor showers and stuff as a kid, but I definitely didn't look forward to them landing in my yard or through my roof.
I did not see what it was, but from everybody I talked to, it was a flaming ball falling from the sky and landed in that general area.
The Penn Valley Fire Department, along with Cal Fire, battled the flames for hours.
Meteorite, asteroid, one of those hail.
And are now investigating what started the fire in this rural area.
Definitely feel very lucky that it was 30 feet away from me and not five.
And as Procida and his wife pick up the pieces of what's left of their home, they know they could have lost much more and realize the odds may be in their favor.
They said it's a 1 in 4 trillion chance. So I guess I might be buying a lottery ticket today.
Now those clips courtesy of Global News and NBC Nightly News, respectfully. And the point wasn't to scare anyone. Your odds are likely better to win the lottery than to be bashed on the noggin with a space rock. But it is possible at literally any given moment. So back to Andy's story. So it could be, like I suggested, a meteorite fell, landing on the cow. But it's also possible that there's something equally disturbing but much more nefarious at play here. And I'll leave you with this final thought, a detail that might render my theory useless and or deepen the mystery further. Andy mentioned that the field of corn was very recently harvested, making it unlikely that the dead cow was there at the time. Yet, Andy included a detail about the carcass being stripped clean to the bone. Now, most farmers cut corn in that part of the country around this time of year, late November, early December. Not the time of year most carcass processing insects are active and about. Insects that one would think would be necessary to break down a body that quickly. Is it possible for an entire cow to be processed down like that in a matter of days, in the briskness of late November in Illinois, no less? Now, I'm afraid questions are all I have here, but we do appreciate the opportunity to ask them, Andy. And we thank you again for calling in. Now, folks, if you have a story you would like me to share here on the show, a true story, simply call our 24-hour toll-free hotline at 1-888-608-NIGHT. That's 1-888-608-6444. Now, I'm not so certain that it's toll-free for international listeners. So in that case, record your story on your phone and email it to me at monstersamonguspodcast@gmail.com. And since we've reached the halfway point of this season, it's time for me to announce the theme for next season's opener. I've received several suggestions from people over the past several months, but one stuck out to me as a clear favorite. Someone sent in an email or a comment or some suggestion that we do paranormal investigator stories next. And I really like that idea. But let's open it up a bit. We'll open it up to include researchers of all of Fortiana's subjects. UFO investigators, Bigfoot researchers, ghost hunters, ghost tour guides, that sort of thing. So basically, if you somehow study the strange and unusual, and have a story you feel is worthy of the show, we want to hear from you. Call that hotline at 1-888-608-NIGHT. But don't forget, when you do call in, please say the words paranormal investigator early on in the first couple sentences so my fancy search engine thing can locate you and pluck you out of the sea of entries. Now, a big thanks to that mysterious listener for the suggestion, because I couldn't find the email. And a big thanks to all the other listeners that left their suggestions. I'll be sure to circle back to those for the start of Season 16. Now back to Season 14, with this call from Sierra in Arizona.
Hi, Derek. My name is Sierra from Mesa, Arizona. The story I am going to tell tonight actually occurred in Apple Valley, Minnesota, where I grew up. So I was probably in second grade, and I was going to have a sleepover with my friend Monica that afternoon. We had walked home from school, and, you know, we're doing the things that girls do, just hanging out. It got to be around dinner time, and it was just me, her mom, and her baby brother that were home. And her baby brother was maybe 2 or 3 months old. So her mom was busy with him, so she made us some mac and cheese and then sent us outside to play. They had this big backyard with a trampoline and a little shed. And Monica and I somehow got into talking about ghosts. Our favorite show was Taps at the time on Sci-Fi. Somehow the topic came up. She was like, I think I heard my parents talking about the fact that a guy died in the shed that we have in our yard right over there. And I was like, what? And she said, yeah, I had overheard my dad talking to my mom about the fact that a guy somehow got locked in that shed and overheated during the summer and died. And us being little girls, we were just like, oh, that's crazy. That's weird. But then she started to tell me that she had had lots of experiences of hearing things moving around, and she would put things in there and they would get moved and misplaced. And so we were like, okay, let's have a little experiment. So we decided to put one bowl of our mac and cheese in the shed just on the floor. We didn't think anything of it. And mind you, this is not like some sort of crazy shed. It's just a small little wooden, maybe 5-foot by 8-foot shed, and it has a metal roof. There's only one door, and it's at the front, and it's got like a, you know, a little latch to it. So we go in, and I mean, there's a bunch of garden tools and bikes and stuff like that. Nothing major, but there's definitely no one in there. And there's no way for anyone to get in there other than the door. There's no windows, there's no back door, there's nothing. And it's sitting on top of a concrete foundation. So we set a bowl of mac and cheese down, and then she's got this necklace too that she's wearing. I think it was a little plastic one with a dragon on it. And so we hung that off of her bike, just being like, oh, I wonder what'll happen. We walk out and we shut the door and we kind of antagonize whoever this guy is. We're like, oh, come out and talk to us. We're making up names and we're just kind of like being annoying, but nothing happens. And so we go, we sit, we play on the trampoline, and maybe 30 minutes go by and all of a sudden we hear this loud bang from inside. And so we run in there and the bowl of mac and cheese has been chucked across the shed, and it had to be forceful. I mean, it was a loud bang and it flew across the whole length of the shed, so 8 feet, and had been thrown against the back. And the necklace that she had hung up was gone. Couldn't find it anywhere in the shed. We looked all over the entire shed. So, you know, we're pretty freaked out, but we're like, okay, maybe it was an animal, you know, whatever. We kind of just try to laugh it off. But now, looking back as an adult, in Minnesota, the only sorts of animals that it could have been is like maybe a raccoon or a possum. But this was a bowl of mac and cheese in a plastic bowl sitting in the middle of this concrete floor towards the door. It was closer towards the door that had been thrown with great force across the entire shed. I really don't have an explanation for it. Her father was not home. And like I said, her mom was in the house with her baby brother the whole time. And there's no way that anybody else could have been in that shed. Now, I've looked into news reports of a man dying in a shed in Apple Valley, Minnesota, and I've never found anything. So I don't know. She moved out of that house just maybe another 5 or 6 months after that. So I never got to explore it again. We were just kind of like, wow, that was a freaky thing, and just never talked about it again because we were kids. So if anybody else has a take on that, I guess, yeah, that's my crazy ghost story. Thanks for listening.
Thank you, Sierra. I think it's safe to say that that was a unique experience. And I, too, spent several minutes trying to find a news story that could validate the tale of a man dying in the shed. But I, too, came up dry. Mostly. Strangely enough, I did find several references to bodies being found in sheds in the state of Minnesota, but nothing matching Sierra's description. Now, perhaps some county records can be more helpful in solving that riddle. I'd start at my local library. But as for the mac and cheese toss, the only logical explanation I could think of was already addressed by Sierra in her call. A small critter that smelled the food and came out of its hiding spot to score some cheesy mac. And in doing so, tipped the bowl. But let's be honest with ourselves. We both know that's not what Sierra described. And deep down, we both know that the entire thing is wildly unsettling. So for now, I thank you again, Sierra, for sharing it with us.
Attention all holiday shoppers.
If you're looking for a unique gift to impress everyone on your holiday shopping list, check out Uncommon Goods. Whether you're shopping for your boss or your entire family, Uncommon Goods has something for everyone, especially those hard-to-buy-for people who seem to have everything. Now, Uncommon Goods has everything from a horror movie scratch-off poster for your film buff friends to a Curious Cat tarot card deck for, come to think of it, maybe I should get that for Sarah. Whether you're looking for art, games, or kitchenware, they have plenty of awesome options for your eclectic gift giving. Also, when you shop at Uncommon Goods, you're supporting artists and small independent businesses. And many of the items are handmade in small batches, so shop early. And you know, with every purchase made at Uncommon Goods, they give back $1 to a non-profit partner of your choice. They've already donated over $2.5 million to date. Now to get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/monsters among us. That's uncommongoods.com/monsters among us for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods. We're all out of the ordinary. Now up next, we meet up with Rochelle for a call that just might shut this whole operation down.
Hi, Derek. My name is Rochelle.
I live in Arizona. This is about a UFO sighting in Arizona, and I just all the things happening with it, I just had to send this in to you, and I will be sending you an email with a map and a photograph. So this sighting occurred between the end of February, right? This is 2022. So somewhere between the end of February and March 18th today, 2022. So this is not something I saw. This is the brother of a friend of ours from Cameron, Arizona, very sparsely populated area along the Little Colorado River. We heard this story of this friend of ours told us her brother was out in the evening outside of his house in Cameron and just looking out and getting some fresh air, getting wood for his fireplace. And as he's looking out towards, it's all dark, so he's looking out towards the Little Colorado River and he sees a bunch of lights in the sky, not high up in the sky. The lights seem very low, like as if they're in the canyon where the Little Colorado River runs. And he's seeing this series of lights, which was shocking to him because, like I said, it's a very sparsely populated area in Cameron, Arizona, and that is in within the Navajo Reservation. So he grabs his phone and takes a photograph of what he's seeing. And then evidently he posted it, I think on Facebook. I don't know what social media he posted it on. And I don't know him personally, but we know his sister. And his sister is telling us this story. So he posted around. And like I said, this was sometime at the end of February, early March. And then it's getting interesting. The latest story we hear just this morning is that the FBI went to his house. They found him in Cameron, which is in the middle of nowhere. And the FBI asked him to take down everything that he had posted online about this sighting that he had. And originally it was when he had the sighting and it went around all of our friends and family, everyone was making jokes about the sighting and it was amazing. The photograph is amazing. But then the FBI shows up and that is really, oh my gosh, that's just scary and unbelievable. We don't know anyone that's ever happened to. We hear about these stories, we see them in movies, but I never knew anybody that this happened to. So I just had to send this in. I hope that you've gotten other comments or stories about this sighting because it's pretty weird and amazing. So anyways, I'm going to email that picture to you right away and the little map. And thank you for listening to my story.
Thank you, Rochelle. Another wild entry. And this time, something out of a Spielberg movie or something. A UFO in the rural part of the American Southwest. A quickly snapped photo and an unwanted visit from the Federal Bureau of Investigations. Nowhere is it I've heard that combo before. Now, the following article was published just last week on the 12th of November, 2022. By the Irish Sun. UFO riddle, mystery as Area 51 investigator says FBI and U.S. Air Force ransacked home and seized all his computers in humiliating raid. Jorg Arnu runs the Dreamland Resort website dedicated to the goings-on at the mysterious base in Nevada, but said he was subject to a humiliating raid. Arnu said his homes in Las Vegas and also the town of Rachel were searched by a combined team of the FBI and Air Force Office of Special Investigations. Writing on the website, he said, "Each location saw at least 15 to 20 agents rummaging through our homes in about 8 vehicles. I will spare you the details, but it got quite tense and humiliating for me in Rachel and for my girlfriend in Vegas," he said. "All my laptops, phones, memory sticks, cameras, drone, and other items were seized. When it was all over, I was left in Rachel with two broken doors, broken furniture inside the house, and zero means to communicate. Our Vegas home fared a little better, with only a broken front door and torn down blinds. Arnoux said that in the process, he lost all my data, medical files, financial and tax records, passwords, everything. To the best of my knowledge, I have not broken the law, he said. Now the similarities here are obvious, but the two experiences seem to be drastically different. Rochelle's contact was quote-unquote asked to remove the content. If what's published in the Irish Times is to be believed, Arnoux was served a warrant, complete with firearms and destruction of property. Now, here's the part where we start playing with fire. And as I hinted to previously, we might just end up with a visit ourselves. Rochelle sent me the photograph in her story. And I, of course, have it up in the show notes at monstersamonguspodcast.com. But for those that won't look, it at first glance looks like a shower of sparks, shooting from right to left in front of a darkened background. But I did some fooling around with the brightness, and you can actually see some sort of ridge or skyline in the background, which gives credence to the claims made in Rochelle's entry. I don't know. It's interesting. It doesn't look like a craft of any sort, but the lights do look a little strange. The coloration, the shapes. Have a look for yourself. Again, the photo is in the show notes. And let me just say, I'm not responsible for any knocks you might receive afterward. But thank you, Rochelle, for calling in. Now, speaking of FBI raids, that just might be the explanation for this next entry. Believe it or not, that might be the least spooky of all the possibilities. Anonymous from Arizona. Welcome to the program.
Hi, I'd like to remain anonymous, but I'm from a rural town in Arizona. I work in this office setting, and I'm not quite sure where or what category any of this would fall under. I'm kind of a skeptic. I've heard plenty of stories of paranormal activities and just all these unnatural sort of phenomenons. Just being a skeptic, I hadn't actually seen anything myself until one day. It's a normal day at the office. I work in a secure location, a lot of sensitive information. So anytime I leave the office, I have to lock the door and it automatically locks. So I have a key come in and out. I went to the restroom thinking nothing. My office is very tidy, very neat. I came back and there were papers just scattered everywhere. Things were disheveled. And the most odd thing about all of that was water on the floor. I had no water. There was no leaks. It wasn't raining. And I tried searching and looking for anything that might explain anything with paranormal activity and traces of water. And it definitely was like when you're getting out of the shower, you step out and there's like a wet footprint or something. And I took a picture, but the odd thing was I swore I had taken this picture. I previewed it. I saw it. And I was telling a coworker about this incident. And I looked for the picture and it was gone. I could not find it on my phone. And it just bugged me because I've never heard of anything where there would be traces of water left. And this isn't the only incident. There's plenty of more incidences that have happened. Not specifically to me. This facility I work in just seems to have a lot of activity. I've definitely heard many, many stories, and I just wanted to call and share that. I don't know if you have any insight about what in the world, if you've had any other callers call in with similar stories, incidences, you could offer any insight. I have no idea. This is the first time I had actually had any sort of run-in with anything like this. I've brand new to the podcast. I have been binging like crazy. I'm a big fan of the work that you do. I've definitely learned a lot, opened my mind to a lot of new things. Definitely, there's some things I've never heard of. Like I said, I'm from a rural, very, very remote rural small town in the middle of nowhere, Arizona. So hearing these different stories from other sides of the country all over, very interesting. So thank you for all of your content. Definitely, definitely looking forward to continuing binging your podcast. Thanks for listening. Have a good evening.
Thanks, caller. I'm pretty sure the FBI alerts you in some way when you've been raided. Hence that whole warrant thing. So obviously that's probably not a likely scenario. Although that is the easiest explanation for the missing photograph. Just ask Rochelle's contact. But taking another approach, this odd occurrence might just be a legal issue, more so than a paranormal one. Our caller mentioned working in a secure location with sensitive materials. So is it possible that someone saw value in those materials and made entry while our caller took her brief break? He picked lock, some searching around, and they're gone before she even knew they were there. Aside from the mess, of course. But you know, that doesn't explain the photo. And it may not even be possible. Our caller was vague about the work she does. So perhaps there's security measures in place that would make the suggestion of a human intruder near impossible and irrelevant. But hey, I wouldn't be doing my job if I didn't at least ask these questions. So I don't know, caller. That is a good one. We appreciate the entry. And thanks again for calling in. Now, folks, the holidays are rapidly approaching, so please remember our little merch store for that listener on your gift list. We have shirts, bags, posters, patches, pins, stickers, ornaments, and much, much more. Not to mention a Redbubble account for those items that we don't keep in stock. Just visit monstersamonguspodcast.com/shop, or just hit that shop tab. Now, folks, I heard from our printer just the other day, and the hoodies are scheduled to ship out by the end of this week. So chances are very good that they'll be shipping out just after Thanksgiving. So a big thanks for your patience while we get these bad boys out to you. Now I hope you're ready for this next one, which comes to us from the Commonwealth of Kentucky. Please welcome Scott to the program.
Hi, Derek. My name is Scott, and I'm from Union, Kentucky. I was just listening to your most recent episode, Season 13, Episode 2, I think it was, and you had a little segment about a town in Boone County, Kentucky called Petersburg, Kentucky, and the segment was all about Native American sightings, and I believe the caller was speaking about burial grounds and whatnot, but actually, I don't live too very far from there. And when my grandparents first moved out to this area in like the early 70s, there was a burial ground across the street from their property. And the person who had owned the property, well, he was your average, you know, farmer. And in those days, they didn't care about, you know, burial grounds or history or anything like that. It was just something that was in the way of him, you know, raising his crops. So he plowed it down. And ever since then, there have been spooky goings on around here. Just about everything you can think of, really. I've seen apparitions. I've heard my name being called. Heard what sounds like screams in the night. Seen like specters floating. It's been nuts. But the one I want to talk to you about today actually happened when I was very young. 3 and 4 years old, really. And it's just something that I can remember as clear as day. At that time, my mother and I lived with my great-grandmother, whose house is on the same stretch of property as my grandparents. It was pretty early in the morning. I know I had to wake up early because my mom woke up and had to leave for work in the morning. But I was sitting in the kitchen playing with a toy car or something like that. And in our kitchen, there's a door that leads out to the carport. And I was sitting like right in front of the store just playing. And I remember some thing walked past the door. And the best way I can describe it was it was a witch. It was your stereotypical witch. It had green skin. It had a crooked nose. I remember it being bald with maybe like a few like wisps of hair on it. But I remember it walked to the window. It looked at me. It smiled. And then it walked past. And I was terrified. Like I said, I was a small child. And I was just absolutely terrified. I had to run back into the house, and I went to my great-grandmother, and she just basically put me back to bed. But it was the creepiest thing. And later on, to come to find out, I wasn't the only one to have seen a witch around here. So basically, before my family moved here, they owned a different property in the same basic area. And there, they lived like in front of a graveyard. There was a graveyard behind them. And my aunt and my uncle both saw what they claimed to be a witch just hanging out in the graveyard. So it's some pretty creepy stuff. I have a ton more things going on around here that I'll definitely call back about. But I really wanted to call about this because of the report from the Petersburg, Kentucky area. But thanks, Derek. Love the show. Have a good day. Goodbye.
Thank you, Scott. It's absolutely heartbreaking to learn that any ancient mound was not only desecrated, but leveled altogether. I grew up near Mound Country in Ohio, and as a kid, I would always ask my dad if every hill we saw was a mound. I think I was a bit obsessed with the idea that an entirely different culture lived there a thousand or a few thousand years before I did, and that their works could still be seen today, hidden amongst the trees. So it's a damn shame to hear one was destroyed. But as for the witch, I couldn't imagine seeing something like that. Actually, I could. I often talk about the Tall Man haunting episode of Unsolved Mysteries, in which the children involved in that haunting too saw a witch. And I saw the reenactment of that, which was more than my 9 or 10 year old nerve could handle. So I get it, Scott. It was probably not a fun experience. But when talking about witches in the state of Kentucky, a fun little legend always comes to my mind. Just about an hour west of Scott's place lies the Witch's Tree of Louisville, Kentucky.
The year was 1889, and at the corner of 6th and Park stood a tall, majestic maple tree. But it was used for more than just a shady spot on a sunny day.
And every night this coven of witches would gather under its branches, and here they cast their spells and they brew their potions, they do the things that witches do.
Until one day, the city decided they wanted to cut down the tree and use it as a maypole for its annual May Day celebration. The witches begged the city not to take away their beloved tree, but officials didn't listen.
One morning, a woodsman came and he chopped the tree down and went crashing to the ground.
Obviously, the witches weren't very happy. And as they fled to find a new gathering space, the head witch put a curse on the city of Louisville.
Beware, Louisville. Beware, 11th month.
And exactly 11 months later came the devastating tornado of 1890. Legend has it, as the storm moved through the neighborhood, a lightning bolt shot out of the twister and struck the stump where the old tree stood.
There was a tremendous explosion, and this tree sprang up from the earth in a shower of sparks and flame and smoke to replace the tree that had been stolen from the witches.
Now the tree is decorated by trinkets and beads, all said to be a peace offering to the witches.
Now that clip courtesy of WLKY, CBS Channel 32, out of Louisville. And I certainly don't mean to make light of your encounter, Scott. Your region certainly has a plethora of witch-related stories, and that's likely for a good reason. And that also puts your encounter in good company. Thank you again for sharing it with us. Now, unless you're brand new here, you've already heard me talk about microdosing and how all sorts of people are microdosing to feel better in their everyday lives. Well, microdosing has been a big help for me when dealing with insomnia and anxiety. It helps me to chill out after a stressful day and fall asleep fast enough to avoid my sleep paralysis demon. Now, tonight's show is sponsored by Microdose Gummies by Lumi Labs. Microdose Gummies deliver the perfect entry-level doses of THC and CBD that help you feel just the right amount of good. Now, before you tense up with my mention of THC, keep in mind that Microdose Gummies are legal everywhere in the United States. And while these gummies contain cannabinoids, remember, we're not talking about getting high in that stereotypical sense. We're talking about entry-level doses to help you chill out, sleep more soundly, and overall just feel better. Microdose is available nationwide. To learn more about microdosing THC, go to microdose.com and use code MONSTERSAMONGUS to get free shipping and 30% off your first order. Links can be found in the show notes, but again, that's microdose.com, and the code is MONSTERSAMONGUS. As always, supporting our sponsors supports the show. So thank you for listening. And back to the Creep Show. And here we are, staring down the home stretch. And I might have saved some of the creepiest entries for last. Trevor from Utah. Tell them what I mean.
Miss Trevor, I'm calling from a suburb just north of Salt Lake City, Utah. I'm calling because I wanted to share a story that took place when I was about 16 or 17 in North Hollywood, California, where I grew up. There was a house in our neighborhood that was owned by a couple. They were a former bikers for like a biker gang, and they lived in this house right next door to me. The husband worked very early mornings. So this particular day, evening, I was, it was about 11 o'clock on a warm summer evening. And he had just gone to bed. The wife and I were watching television, and all of a sudden the electricity went out. And we noticed it didn't involve the whole city. It was just the house, because the street light outside the house gave off like a yellow-orange glow that shone through the windows and through the door. The doors were all propped open, and the windows were all propped open so that we could get the air in. It was warm. Anyway, she decided that she would get up and go outside to check the breaker. She had three very large dogs, so they decided to go with her, and I sat in the dark. The majority of it was dark, with just the street light shining through the window. While I was sitting there, I was kind of expecting the lights to come back on, when I happened to notice somebody step into the doorway on the front door. And I saw, I thought it was her, so I started talking to her and asking her about the electricity. Well, what's going on with the electricity? And she didn't say anything. She just kind of leaned against the door jamb. So I stood up and I started to walk towards her. And as I started walking toward her, she stood upright in the door. And I noticed that it wasn't her at that time. She was about 5'7". This person was at least 6'1". I'm 6'1", and they were as tall, if not taller, than myself. And it startled me. My heart started to jump, and I noticed that I could smell cigarette smoke. This person that was standing in the door, who I just saw the silhouette, they were backlit from the streetlight, was smoking. And I said, "Who are you? What's going on? Where's Arlene?" is what we'll call her. And he lifted his hands to his mouth and took a drag off the cigarette. The ember of the cigarette lit the area around. I could see his hand where it shone brightly, but I couldn't make out any features on his face. So at that point, I started to panic. I started looking around for something to grab to protect myself, because I didn't know who this person was and what they were going to do. And just as I looked back up, one of the dogs ran up the steps and the person in front of me, the silhouette in front of me, disappeared, kind of like it had turned into smoke. And all the lights went on and Arlene came up into the doorway and she looked at me. She said, "Oh no, what's going on?" And I said, I need to go. And she says, "Hold on, what's going on?" So I told her what I had seen, what was going on. And she just kind of looked at me and then looked down and shook her head. And she said, I'm so sorry that I haven't warned you about this before, but there is a ghost in this house." And I started to question her and she said, "He doesn't seem to bother me. I mean, he's actually very kind. It was an old man that lived in the house and he would smoke his cigarettes." And she stated that she could smell the cigarette smoke, but he would smoke cigarettes and just sit in this living room all day long. She said she knows that he's not a bad person or a bad spirit because he's never done anything to hurt either her or her husband. She said the only time that she's ever really been scared of him is when she gets out of the shower and she opens her closet door in her bedroom to get clothes out. She sees him standing behind the clothing, looking at her with a big smile on his face. That's the story. I never went back to that house after that, but I figured I would share that with you. I'm a big fan of your podcast, and I have listened to it for the last 4 months, just loving every episode. Keep up the good work, and thank you for everything. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Trevor. That is some creepy stuff. How about that instant verification? Some witnesses wait their entire lives to get some sort of confirmation of what they saw. But Trevor here was lucky enough to get it within minutes of his experience. And the mention of the cigarette smoke. You know, my mother-in-law now lives in her father's old home, and she reports the smell of tobacco pipe smoke from time to time. A favorite of her late father's, who has now been gone over 10 years. So scents or smells, whatever you want to call them, they play a big part in many paranormal encounters. And it seems that tonight, Trevor's is no different. Thank you again, sir, for calling in. All right, folks, one last announcement before we push play on these last few calls. As the show continues to grow, we've reached the point that we need some help. We are and have been a two-person operation for years now, but we're hoping to add another member to our team to increase MAU's potential. Which means that Monsters Among Us is hiring. We're currently looking to staff a part-time remote position to help with editing audio, research, organization, and miscellaneous administrative tasks, with the potential for writing and appearing here on the show. For full information on applying and a full job description, please visit monstersamonguspodcast.com/jobs. That's J-O-B-S. Or just click the jobs tab at the website. We're looking forward to working with you. And I'm also looking forward to working this next call into tonight's show. The eeriness runs deep in this entry from Taylor in Virginia.
Hey, Derek. So my name is Taylor. I'm from Richmond, Virginia, and I've been listening to your podcast now for about a week, and I feel compelled to share this story with you. I've kind of been prone to supernatural encounters throughout my life. However, this one takes place about 10 years ago inside of Richmond. There's a place called Colonial Heights, and there's a school there that about 10 years ago, me and my brother and our friend, we went there. And so it's set up like if you walk behind the school, on one side is deep swamp and on the other side is deep woods. And there's a trail that stretches down to an opening with a fishing pier. I'm about 2 miles down. And so we go there one night. It's about 11 p.m., 12 a.m. to midnight. and my phone dies. And it's a spooky place in general, so I try to get them to walk back up to the car with me to charge my phone to call my girlfriend at the time. And of course, they don't want to go. We're 19 years old at the time. We're drinking, but that's it. No hallucinogenic drugs, anything like that. So they stay down at the pier, and I walk back up to the car. The walk back up was fine, but I get to the car, charge my phone, and as I'm walking back down, this is about 12:30 at night, maybe 1 in the morning, so I know we were the only people there. I get halfway back down the trail, and I just get this feeling, and I stop dead in my tracks. And as I stop, from the left side where it's deep swamp that no human being could just walk through, run through, a woman emerges from that side and stops right in the middle of the path about 10 feet from me. And I remember she was like pale white, almost like when your TV screen goes staticky white. She was naked and her hair was covering her breasts, and she stops and turns and looks at me and says, "Run, they're coming for us." And then I can't even speak, move anything. And she takes off and runs through to the other side, which is like really deep woods. And I hear it's rustling through the bushes, and I hear it go off. And as soon as I snap out of my shock, I bolt down to the rest of the trail where my brother and our friend is at. And I'm freaked out. I'm scared. I tell them what happened. Of course, they laugh and don't believe me. And we leave. And so I do my own little research, and I find that there's spirits that present themselves to you into whatever form they think would lure you into following them, which, so I just chalked it up to that, and I believed that for a long time. Well, I never wanted to go back to that place, but one day during the daytime, my brother, after so many years of me sticking to my story, telling him what happened, he starts to get intrigued a little bit by it, and he convinces me to go back. So we get there, and he's walking off from me a little bit, and I just see him stop dead in his tracks, and he turns back and yells for me to come here. And so within those few years that pass by, we go back, and it has now been made a historical landmark. And my brother's standing at a sign saying that on those grounds during the Civil War was a women's hospital and asylum for women that were captured during the war. And I could just see his face instantly. I realized instantly that night that's exactly what I saw. And it just still gives me the chills even thinking about it. It was clear as day. Yeah. After that, he, needless to say, believed what happened that night. I really appreciate what you're doing with the podcast. Really good content. Thank you.
Thanks, Taylor. Okay, I did some digging, and I believe I located the park in question. And it's actually in a tiny town about 20 minutes outside the city of Richmond, called Petersburg, Virginia. And the park, Fort Clifton Park, as it's now known, sits on the northeastern side of the town, right on the Appomattox River, just as Taylor described. But unfortunately, that's all I could find. No hospital, no prison, no historical monument. But that's not to say that it's not there. So I'm going to reach out to you, dear listener. Does anything regarding this story ring a bell to you? Are you from Petersburg and know a legend involving a naked woman along the Appomattox? Or do you simply have some information on the prison or hospital that stood there? If so, give me a call or email, 888-608-NIGHT or monstersamonguspodcast@gmail.com. And until we learn more, a big thanks for the goosebumps, Taylor. and thanks for the tale. And here we are, folks, the end of the line for those that allow it to be. And I have something historic in store for you this evening. Dee Dee from Missouri, welcome to the program.
Hi, this is Dee Dee from Missouri, and this actually took place in Wisconsin, about the central part of the state. This happened back in the 70s when I was a teenager. We lived on a farm. My dad had a beef farm, and we had one milk cow. And it was left to me to do the chores that night because my parents were gone away for the weekend, so I was back there all by myself. And every night when I did milk the cow, I would sing to her, and she would swish her tail, letting me know she enjoyed that. And then all of a sudden, she kind of stiffened up on me, and her ears picked forward, and she got really nervous. I could just tell. So I finished up what I was doing, and I walked outside, and all of a sudden, I noticed that there was no sound of crickets, no sound of the frogs. It was dead silent, and that made the hair on the back of my neck just stand up, and I knew something was wrong. It made me stop walking, and I was looking around. It was really dark, and we are surrounded by woods, and all of a sudden, I heard a really low growl, which made my heart start beating really hard. And then there was a howl. Now this howl was unlike any howl I have ever heard. When I grew up, my dad used to take us to Canada and we would go camping, and I've heard all kinds of animal sounds. I've heard wolves, and I've heard lynx and cougars and all kinds of animals, but this was unlike anything I have ever heard before. My first instinct was to run. And then, of course, my dad's voice popped in my head, and never run from a predator. So I tried to walk as fast as I could to the house. Got inside the house, and I put a chair up against the door. And I had a hard time sleeping that night. And the next day was school, in high school, and my friends, a lot of them were Native American. And so I decided I was going to share with them what happened. And the minute I started talking to them about it, they looked at each other and they told me, don't say anything. I said, what do you mean? And they said, don't talk about it. Well, this was just killing me because I had to know. And I said, I really want to know what's going on because I've never heard anything like that before. And so my friend Robin, she says to me, she says, there is a legend about evil in the Native American culture that allows the people to turn into a creature called a skinwalker. And she said, but if you talk about it, it gives the skinwalker powers and he will come back. And so I believed in everything that she said. And so I didn't even tell my parents about it. And like I said, this was in the 70s. And later on in the 80s and the 90s, I started hearing stories of a creature that looked like a wolf and walked on two legs called the Beast of Bray Road. Today, I am convinced that what I heard was the Beast of Bray Road. Did I ever see it? No, but I heard it. And like I said, it was unlike anything I have ever heard. And today, it still gives me chills. But it has piqued my interest in all the stories about the Beast of Bray Road. I really believe that that's what I heard that night. Well, I hope you can use this, and I hope the people that listen can enjoy it. Thank you.
Thank you, Dee Dee. Now let's just dive right into this one. For starters, if this is a Beast of Bray Road story, it might just be one of the oldest ones out there. By my calculations, the beast didn't register on a mainstream radar until at least the late 80s. But perhaps we should back up here. And for those of you that aren't familiar with the Beast of Bray Road, this was my introduction to it. A segment from 1993's television program, Inside Edition.
I told my mom I thought I saw a werewolf. And my mom believed me.
I was walking along a good, probably 7 to 10 seconds before It had turned its head.
That thing, that was no dog. That was too big to be a dog. That thing was bigger than me.
That thing was stalking cornfields, jumping on cars, and feasting on roadkill. For 2 years, people in Elkhorn, Wisconsin whispered about a king-sized creature who roamed Bray Road.
It had really big claws. It was holding its roadkill like it had elbows, and it was kneeling on two knees, like a human being might do.
You know, my dad always had this program on when he was making dinner in the evenings. That or reruns of MASH. And I actually remember catching this segment one evening when I was a kid. And sure, it scared the hell out of me. But not the same way the Unsolved Mysteries witch did. Now, the Beast of Bray Road, it awakened a primal fear in me. A fear so strong that it helped build up a bit of an obsession. And to this day, I cannot get enough of the Beast of Bray Road story. So, Dee Dee, your entry was music to my ears. But speaking of ears, that's all we have to go off of here. A spooked cow and some howls in the Wisconsin wind. While residents of the Badger State, howls in the forest are nothing out of the norm. After all, the gray wolf lives in abundance in the state of Wisconsin. So much so that a hunting season on the animal has been hotly debated there for at least half a decade. As WISN, ABC News 12, out of Southeast Wisconsin reports.
Tonight, wolf hunts are on hold in Wisconsin, and right now there's no change in sight. The Department of Natural Resources was supposed to come out with a new wolf management plan in the spring, but now wildlife officials say they don't know when the plan will come out. Wisconsin's wolf population is capped at 350 under the current plan from 1999. The wolf population has grown since then. Recent data shows there are more than 1,000 wolves in Wisconsin. Wolf hunting season was canceled this year after wolves were put on the federal endangered species list.
So that's proof. Wolves do live in the state. But could that be all that Dee Dee heard that night? She does claim to be familiar with the animals of the region, so maybe she was able to rule that out. But the encounter got me thinking, and I was wondering what the Beast of Bray Road actually would sound like. So I scoured the net in search of a sound. And thanks to fellow story collector and podcast host, Lon Strickler, and his Phantoms and Monsters program, I finally found what I was looking for.
Was this orb depositing these creatures, or this creature? Because right after that, we heard this howl that was not, it was definitely not a coyote, it was not a wolf, it wasn't a dog, it wasn't a fox, owl, all these things that we've gone through, that we've listened to, it's not that. This was like a guttural, almost, it was almost like you, a man screaming out in the field. And it was just this low guttural thing. And we have a clip, I think, too, of that. But that's what we heard. And we could not believe it. We heard it in the distance, very faintly in the distance. And then we heard another one closer. And then the third one that you'll hear here is what we heard.
Are you hearing this howl?
I am hearing this howl. It's coming from over that way.
Oh,
that's getting closer.
Now, the voice you just heard was researcher and YouTube personality Eric Mintel with Eric Mintel Investigates. His team captured the eerie howl. Now, I'm not claiming that what Eric recorded was the beast. And I'm not claiming that it wasn't. But based on the audio, it seems he believes that's what he captured. But I don't know. I'm not so easily convinced. To me, it sounds very human-like. Maybe some locals messing with the next batch of Yahoo werewolf hunters roaming around in the fields. But you know, it's a legend that simply won't die. And according to Dee Dee, it's been around for quite some time. whatever it is that's roaming the fields of Wisconsin. I think I'm grateful that it's still there. And I'm grateful for your story, Dee Dee. Thank you for sharing it with us. And that's going to do it for this episode. But before I go, just a quick reminder that I'll be dark next week for my mid-season break. And coincidentally, enjoy a little turkey. Now I'll be back the following week with a brand new episode. In the meantime, I'll release an old Patreon episode to keep everything flowing. So be sure to come by for that. Now Monsters Among Us is written and produced by me, Derek Hayes. Additional support is provided by Sarah Carter Hayes and Addie Lloyd. All media used in this production is done so under the protection of fair use. And if you don't mind, please leave us a rate and review wherever possible. 5 stars and a few kind words go a long, long way to help this show grow. And finally, the terrifying score you heard this evening was provided by Iron Cthulhu Apocalypse, Co.eg Music, and Carl Casey at White Bat Audio. Thank you so much for listening. Keep it spooky. Have a good night. Now tonight's secret entry is a weird one, per usual. Just the way we like it. Dustin from Indiana. Welcome to the program.
Hi, this is Dustin from Indiana. I called previously about the black cats in Maine when I grew up there, and I just had a weird sighting of, and you're going to think I'm crazy, a fairy. I was driving back from the gym January 5th, 2022 at 4:45 a.m. and the wind is about 45 mile an hour wind gust, and it's pretty clear. As I'm driving up the side road in Cicero, Indiana, you could see plain as day over the hood of my truck, and about 8 inches in front of the windshield, this beautiful, about 6 to 7 inch tall yellow thing, which was fluttering like a hummingbird. Now, like I said, the wind is 45 miles an hour gust, and it's cold. There's no hummingbirds right now. And you can see the leaves blowing in the road, but this thing fluttered up in front of me on my driver's side with a consciousness of, like, looking at me. And then it moved in the circular motion, and then up, and then off to the passenger side of the truck. It was obviously not being manipulated by the wind, and the way it was glowing looked like I was in the service, one of those glow sticks that you break and shake at night so you can see things. That's how bright it was glowing. And it fluttered there for a split second. You could see the form and the outline, and like I said, it just took right off. It kind of shook me up a little bit because it's like, what was that? And the only thing I can think of, it had to be a fairy. My friend, who's a monster hunter, literally asked me some questions trying to debunk everything, and it just wasn't happening. She sent me a picture of, like, some bug, and it wasn't that. I know for a fact, because when this thing flew in front of me, it was like I said, a chem light attached to a Barbie doll. It was emitting its own light source, because there was nothing coming out of my windshield, as dark as it was, and it was over the hood and in front of the windshield, so the headlights couldn't hit it, and there was no light source. There was no cars coming towards me. Was another question she asked. There was no other lights that could have emitted this light source. And then when she sent me pictures of bugs, that wasn't it either, because it didn't have antenna. When I was thinking about it, it didn't have any antenna whatsoever. Also, the whole thing was glowing except for the white spots where there was eyes. And when it fluttered there and looked in my windshield as it was going with the truck, I made eye contact with it. It's kind of like making eye contact with, like, a dog or something, where you know there's intelligence and you know there's an understanding there. And curiosity, if you will. So I just wanted to add that because I've been getting hammered with debunkings from her all day to the point it's actually kind of insulting. And I was like, this is not what you think. It was unlike anything I've ever seen. And I even had to drop the I'm a trained forward observer. Observing is what I did. And I know to think clearly and not to panic and not to rush to conclusions. And I'm telling you, what I saw was literally like a Barbie doll with wings fluttering like a hummingbird in front of me, emitting its own light source and making eye contact with me for a brief second before it went back into this hard wind and back around like Tinkerbell, for lack of better terms, the Disney shows, and just away it went. Again, it was today, which is January 5th, 2022 at 4:45 a.m. with 45 mile an hour wind gusts and 32 degrees outside. Not a hummingbird, no reflections, no nothing. I know I saw, and it had to have been something I don't even believe in. I don't even believe in fairies. Fairies I put in like the group of unicorns and leprechauns and stuff that don't exist. And I'm telling you that it had to have been what it was because there's no other explanation. And that's it. And thanks for your time.
Thank you, Dustin. You know, I don't believe in fairies either. But somehow, I believe a lot of the witnesses when they say they saw one. So I guess that means I want to believe. Now notice he mentioned that the sighting took place in January in Indiana. Now if you've ever been to Indiana in January, you would know it's not a warm place. And add 45 mile an hour winds to the mix, and you got yourself an environment that most likely cannot support insect life, let alone a moth or a butterfly. That might fit Dustin's description. That's the wrinkle that gets me in the story. It's too cold for bugs, too windy for small birds, and fairies aren't supposed to exist. Now, it would be helpful if I knew the sort of environment a tiny light being prefers, but until that day, I'm just going to say thank you, Dustin, for that crazy experience. Now, speaking of crazy experiences, those of you sticking around for tonight's Beyond portion of the program are in for a terrifying treat. Bigfoot, alien abduction, shadow people, and more lie in wait in tonight's Beyond. And to join us, simply visit patreon.com and search for Monsters Among Us podcast and join the $5 level with your monthly $5 pledge, and you instantly get access to tonight's bonus content and some 60 more hours of back material. Again, that's patreon.com/monsters among us podcast. Now, follow me into the beyond, where Frank in New York is waiting to kick us off.
Hey, Derek, this is Frank from Long Island. I called a few months ago about a...